I should have recorded all that about your new foal, Vicky, but
Oh yeah.
well.
Well,
So
if
your
I knew how
name.
to send videos, I would say, did you get that one little video of her running?
I did. Very cute. Yes. So I've gotten to see some pictures of her little paint foal, right?
No, she's
Or.
almost Gruella
Oh.
with a big star and a white snip.
Okay, I
I'm
didn't see her whole body then. I guess I didn't, I missed that
Mom's a
one.
paint.
Mom's a paint. That's what I had in mind. But
Yeah.
she's solid.
She's solid.
Good.
Yeah, she's solid except for the star and the snip. And she's got black feet except for one hind hoof is split right in the middle, black and white.
Yeah.
So
Good. All right,
I
so.
hope she doesn't change colors, but the stud, I guess, was gray. And, you know, I just don't want a white horse.
Oh.
But
Well, I
it is
learned
what it is.
with like all the Arabians are born very dark.
Yep.
Actually, all gray horses are born very dark. And the
Yep.
way you can tell if they're going to be gray is just white hairs around the muzzle.
Oh, okay.
So if she has a lot of white hairs around the muzzle and kind of the just above her mouth,
Okay.
then she might be gray.
Her belly's white, but her ear hair is so long and it's brown. And but yeah, it's just interesting. And I didn't realize they said they can start, if they weren't born with their incisors, they'll start breaking through her incisors and molars within 3 to 8 days.
Isn't that amazing?
Ah, it's
Yeah.
incredible.
And they're up and running in no time. Gotta survive.
She's running. She did a slide stop yesterday. She jumps the creeks. I put her out in the pasture the first day, and I figured she might as well learn how to run over bumpy ground because that's
Well,
life.
and when you observe foals, what you really see with a foal is the power of coordination.
Yeah.
And they don't have a lot of muscle strength yet, right?
Okay.
So getting up on all fours, you know, the first 2 minutes is wobbly, and
Yep.
then the coordination kicks in. And then they start moving around, and just to suckle, the coordination kicks in. And it's amazing to see how fast, like you said, already cantering circles around her mother with control and balance. And none of that really is muscular strength. It's all coordination. And that's
Interesting.
when we're working with balancing horses, we're going
What
back
I
to
do
that
love
place.
about everything you're sending.
Sorry. When we go back to thinking about coordination, one of the obstacles we have with older horses is you see how fast they develop patterns of coordination. So, like horses that have maybe only ever had 30 days of training to be ridden for the first time, it's very quick how fast they adopt a coordination to figure out how to not fall over with a rider, how to walk, trot, canter, whether the rider was balanced or unbalanced. And so these habits are in there very quickly and ingrained quickly, right? So as you develop her, every new thing you teach her, if you're looking for, even with a foal, reinforcing the learning frame of mind, kind of looking at can she do it with more relaxation versus less? And instead of just forcing little foals to do something, you can already work with them like an adult horse. And the rate of learning, like the tricky part of foals, is that their rate of learning is incredibly fast. So whether they learn things we want or don't want, whether they learn to balance their coordination and keep their coordination balanced, I should say, or develop dysfunction, all of that happens at warp speed with horses that are under a year old.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. And you see how fast she's learning and adapting. And so, with everything you know from working with your older horses on balance, it's a little gentler. It's not as perfect. And you find kind of clever ways to apply the concepts, but you can apply the concepts right away with all the handling you do. And it just kind of keeps the nervous system always developing in the right direction.
Yeah, it's because she's already pointing to where she wants to be scratched. Because because
And
I
that
always,
bonding is instant. Like, yeah.
and she doesn't like it if you come to her too fast, but she'll come to you, and then she'll back up and even how her brain is working. She wanted to go visit and talk to Blue and Jasmine, and her mom scooted her away, and she outran her mom, circled back around, and went back to the mayor's to talk to
Yeah.
him.
Yeah, some of these foals are so independent, and you kind of see their little personalities right away. But also think what you're also going to see is the more comfortable she gets, part of the learning curve and the exploration of young horses is testing if they do get a little unsure, testing all five. Well, I shouldn't say all five, they don't shut down, but you'll see different variations of fight or flight, or maybe freezing, or that you won't see fawning, that's kind of man-made, and you won't see shutdown, that's kind of extreme. But little different playing with fight, flight, or freezing. And if you step in and sort of help her through those moments, or you just gently sort of correct her invading your space or being anxious around you, you're constantly reinforcing that she can feel safe with you, like another herd member. And we, one of the things that happens with minis and foals and small dogs and animals is that we think of them as so cute that we don't set little boundaries for them like we would a big horse. And that can really bite you in the ass later. Like some of the hardest horses I ever worked with had been imprinted as foals and had become so assertive that they became aggressive. And we don't like to correct little baby foals because they're so darn cute. But if you don't sort of set your personal space boundaries and respect her personal space boundaries, that can really turn into those horses were so damn dangerous because
Oh, I
they
bet.
just, they had no fear of humans and they saw humans as followers in the herd instead of leaders. And so they just got really aggressive. And typically when we raise a foal, the problem leans in the direction of fight more than flight. I think humans are very good at dealing with their anxiety and touching and bonding, that kind of thing, but we don't set little boundaries of personal space. And young horses don't know that we are not a horse. And like when I lived in Colorado, there was a friend of a friend in New Mexico, and his young foal, I want to say maybe 6 months old, reared up, tapped him on the head, and killed him.
Oh my
Just,
gosh.
yeah. Just and he the foal was just playing, didn't know better because nobody told the foal that was unacceptable behavior.
I
So,
know I'm trying to give her these prebiotics. Very interesting stuff. Have you heard about those? That they inoculate the chickens, and then the chickens' eggs they take and make a paste for the foals to give them all the antibodies to a lot of diseases.
yeah, there's a lot of different prebiotics out on the market, and probiotics are just replenishing the gut biome. And prebiotics are always creating a better environment in the gut for the gut biome. And so you can use both, but that I think it's always a good idea, just keeps them healthier.
Yeah, because they said their stomachs are sterile. Their intestines are sterile when they're born. So they have no immunities other than the cholesterol or colostrum. And
Colostrum, yeah.
colostrum. And so it's interesting, but she's already, I don't want her to get afraid of taking warmer, kind of thing. So but and it tastes good. I let the mom taste it. She goes, "Oh yeah, that's fine. Let her have
Yeah,
it."
yeah. No, and they actually use horse and bovine colostrum for in some prebiotics as an ingredient for adult horses with digestive issues. So colostrum is very powerful. If her colostrum level is high, that's basically the injection of antibiotics coming from the mother.
Yeah, that's what the vet said. Hers were like 800 in
Good.
not even 12 hours. So,
So any other questions or comments or things you guys and Peggy, we still can't see you, but that's okay. We see you and your beautiful dog. Oh, here, I can ask you to start your video, see if that works. Any other questions, comments, things to bring up, you guys?
I'm here, Kirsten, just so you know, but I don't know why it's not working. And I did have a question. So the definition of long and low, how low do you have to go to be long and low?
The top of the head below the back.
Below the back.
That's the minimum.
So ears
And
below the withers. Okay.
ears below the withers, because you can get on the way out of the posture of extension. A lot of people will say, oh, I've arrived because my horse is long and level, which is the posture of basic balance. But it's usually there's like what I call a sneaky version of dropping the back. And it's typical that when horses are coming out of that posture of extension, they're not quite stable enough to really let go of that muscle shortening through the neck and along the spine and to the pelvis. And so they'll hang in a posture that looks long and level. But if they're coming out of a habitual posture of extension like your horses, you really want to see the nose on the ground kind of version of long and low, because
Okay.
those muscles have been shortening for a long time. So any lengthening is an improvement and a step in the right direction. But coming out of extension, if they can't really move with the head, the whole head below the back, then they're still holding on to some of that muscle use for stability. And so that just means the left to right balance isn't quite stable enough for them yet, or the hind quarter engagement isn't quite stable enough for them yet. And most horses that are like Frisco will go through a phase of, I've had horses furrow a line in the arena with their nose. Like they just want their nose literally in the dirt because it feels so good.
Okay, I was just looking for guidance because we're working on that 5 to 10 minutes.
Great.
So,
Great. Yeah, and as you start to get more consistency, like in Peggy's lesson, her horse is still sort of the neck is going up and down and up and down, which is a normal part of the process. And he can hold that long and low posture for maybe three strides at a time right now, which again is normal. And this is why we have to factor in only if he feels safe. Number one, he'll shift his posture from the fight and flight posture, high-headed, to the grazing posture, right, for rest and digest. But then they can't hold it there if their skeletal coordination regarding the straightness, the rotation, and the engagement of the pelvis, if that's not stable or comfortable, then they won't hold that change of posture. So that's the real reason we want them to hold it for 5 consecutive minutes, is changing posture is the last event after a bazillion tiny changes take place, especially around core muscle use and the axial skeleton. So that's why it takes a while to get a change in posture that also stabilizes, which means the horse can hold it for 5 to 10 consecutive minutes. And there's a lot of stuff out there that's really against the posture of long and low, and I get it. But I go, I'm really only asking the horse to be able to sustain that posture for 5 to 10 consecutive minutes to know that the coordination has changed in the direction we need to go for balance. And so I might say they have to hold it 5 to 10 minutes on both directions. There might be a challenge there. Or they have to hold it 5 to 10 minutes walk and trot. That could be another challenge. Canter, they're not going to hold long and low, whether you're doing groundwork, and it's unsafe to ask for it in canter. So I typically will play with canter, but I wouldn't give them a super loose rein if they're still not balanced in the walk and the trot. But getting the posture of long and low for 5 to 10 minutes in the walk, in the trot, and on both directions, typically the canter is safer just from that. And when I work with canter, I prefer to work through multiple transitions rather than making them hold the canter. Because if the coordination isn't balanced, then allowing them to break from canter and repeating the upward is always a lot safer for us and the horse. So, any other questions on that, or does that answer your question, Peggy?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay.
Just want to know when I get there, right?
Okay. And Elizabeth, if we need to look at any more of your long rein videos, I can pull those up really quick. What I had planned for today is a little offbeat. I just stumbled across this video while I was scrolling through YouTube, and it's about physics. And I wanted to share it with the group because and have a little discussion about physics because the importance of physics for what we're doing, just balancing ourselves as riders, balancing horses, physical coordination. The reason physics came into it is because most of what we're dealing with is invisible. And physics helps us understand what we can't see and touch, right? It helps us, we feel it just like. Gravity is explained through physics, but we all feel gravity, especially when we fall off a horse, right? And forces of motion, just Newton's laws of motion, actually help us understand how to decipher what we're feeling when we're riding and tie that into the horse's mechanical coordination. How do we know when the spine is, accurately aligned, right? That there's not even no lateral bending, but we've reduced any subluxations of the vertebra left to right. That changes the forces of motion. So it's the invisible forces of motion that I found are a whole lot easier to work with because the whole mechanical part, like biomechanics, which is now a buzzword in the horse industry, and lots of people are getting very well educated about it. The side effect that I've seen is that riders are still typically trying to physically move body parts on the horse when they ride. So, just like inside leg to outside rein, it was intended to bend the spine, shift the rib cage, and create this lateral bend through the spine. But there's about a million ways a horse cannot do it. And there's only one correct way they can do it. So it's pretty easy to get it wrong when we think we have to put the body parts in the right place or use our aids to help the horse put the body parts in the right place. And I know Deb's not here today, but it's the same with people. Coordination, mechanical coordination is just wickedly complex, right? And it's so easy to get wrong because it would take a lifetime and maybe a few degrees, like your master's or PhD, to really wrap your head around it completely. What's easy and tangible and practical is that every change of coordination is going to generate different forces of motion, whether we're talking the person or the horse, right? So if we balance our bodies, the pressure on our feet changes. If we walk around with more force on our heels compared to the ball of our foot as a habit, that tells us our coordination is dysfunctional and not balanced, right? And my eyes opened to this looking at my own shoes. I was wearing off the heels of my shoes on the outside, but not the inside. That was reflecting my coordination that I was completely unconscious of. And I wore the heels off my shoes always on my right boot before my left boot, right? So the pattern was the same on both heels, but worse on the right, which again is just reflecting my unconscious habits of coordination. And I'm happy to report after Alexander work and all that, I only do that a little bit compared to what I used to do. I go, so trying to correct it is you just don't know what you don't know. And as you become conscious of it, it takes the most amount of attention and effort and repetition to change a habit. But then after you change habits, they operate unconsciously. You don't have to put in the same effort. Or the same, give it the same attention. But that change is the hard part. Oh, Peggy, now we can see your screen.
I was playing around trying to get it to work.
So
So
let me
far.
share this video. It's kind of a fun video, but it's sort of, I wanted to share it because, where is it? Here it is. Because it illustrates kind of what we think of sometimes as magical can be explained mathematically or through the theories that physics operates on. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page. There we go. So this is just a short video, and I think there's music to it, which shouldn't play, but there were no words. Oh, hang on. Let me. Sorry, let me see if I can stop the sound. Oh, there it is. Okay, it'll play through a couple of times. So these are just different experiments with physics. But this is kind of the power of it. When we talk about a horse that outweighs us 10 times and what we're doing with guiding their coordination or guiding their movement. Some of these things are beyond our senses. Like this one interested me. I never even thought this was possible, that water in a glass refracting changed the direction of something printed. So there, they just light a candle from the smoke. Here, he flips a little piece of wood, then he puts a newspaper over the same piece, and the same wood breaks.
Oh my
This is
gosh.
a tensegrity model that they showed quickly, and this is four spoons and four batteries that actually I thought kind of reflected the whole point of balance thing by making the quarter move. This is just a folded piece of paper, and then the same piece of paper accordioned. Changes the load bearing.
Wow.
Right? This is just two arrows on a piece of paper. And when you push a glass in front of it, the same arrows look smaller. And then when they pour water in the glass, the bottom arrow appears to change direction.
What?
There. So glass extinguishing, pulling the smoke up, lighting the candle from the smoke. Flipping a piece of wood, adding a newspaper to the top of the same piece of wood breaks the wood.
Wow.
Tensegrity model, which we talk about all the time, four batteries, equalized forces is what moved the quarters. Piece of copper on a battery just picks up the battery. Folded piece of paper can't hold the box. Box drops. Same folded piece of paper stretched out like an accordion. Holds the same weight and more without collapsing. Two arrows on a piece of paper, the glass makes them look smaller. And then when they pour water in, the bottom arrow appears to change direction.
Unbelievable. How does it do that?
I know, right? It's like
Yeah.
magic. I love these videos. You can find these videos on the internet where they just show these amazing things, but they're all based on the theories of physics.
That would be so cool to teach little kids to get them interested in science.
Right? I think that's maybe why they put them out. And let me see if I could pause it here.
And those are all with the negative down, it looks like. I wonder if that makes a difference.
I'm sure it does. Yeah, it looks like the positive side of all the batteries is upright and the negative
Yeah.
side is down, and then they're
Right.
all connected. It's just metal touching metal.
Well,
And
yeah.
as soon as they add the fourth battery, that's when the quarter in the center just lifts up and starts spinning around the middle. So,
Wild.
yeah, so it's sort of that. For every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction, which is one of the Newton's laws of motion. And it's just fascinating because these are things that our senses, our five senses, say are magic because we can't see anybody holding that quarter. It's just literally levitating between the four batteries.
Do you
And
think we should? Oh, excuse me, go ahead.
I was just going to say it illustrates how forces are always present, but we just can't see them. Right? We
True.
in this case, we couldn't hear the force, we couldn't see the force, but the force is still present, demonstrated by the levitating quarter.
Wow. Do you think we should, develop a saddle pad that is an accordion underneath.
I don't know if I don't know. Like
Would
that,
hold more weight more equally, right?
I don't know. Because what's difficult with riding is we have two bodies that are constantly generating invisible forces. So the accordion paper worked because you have static mass. You don't
Right.
have a moving mass. So that's why I don't know if the accordion would reduce the impact force of the rider's weight on the horse's back, but it certainly wouldn't balance the rider or the horse.
Or it wouldn't push the horse's energy to balance from the ho person, I guess, then. That'd
No.
be interesting.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so all this is really showing is that when you change surface areas, it has an effect on strength.
Wow.
That's what this one is showing. So that folded piece of paper had a more resistant force than the thin piece of paper. And this one I thought was interesting because one of the first things everybody asked me is what does a balance horse look like? And it's such a hard question for me to answer because our eyes, like horses, can compensate in ways that the human eye can't detect. And I thought even this little piece of the video just, I'm going to mute Vicky for a second. Just pushing the glass in front of the arrows changes what the arrows look like to us by pushing a round piece of glass in front of our eyes, right? And then if we add the refraction of water, I was shocked. It blew me away. I'm like, what? It changed the direction of the arrows. So again, it's about refraction, light, how our eyeballs work. But it's like, I just found that fascinating because the piece of paper didn't change, but our perception of it, our visual perception of it did. And I think as humans, people often tell me, oh, I'm a visual learner. And I get that. But the truth about the horse's coordination is only ever in what we feel. And the result of balancing the coordination then creates what we would visually call a very beautiful frame, right? Or that's why I said the head and neck altering their position is the last piece of changing the coordination or the use along the spine and pelvis through the thoracolumbar spine. And so I just thought I'll let it play through one more time because it just fascinated me to watch what looks like magic is all explained through physics. And that something like the weight of a newspaper changed the resistant force on that stick that turned it from flipping to breaking, or this quarter floating around equally between four batteries, or the battery having a force that you don't see until you add the copper, or increasing resistant capacity, resistant force capacity, just by changing the shape, right? So I just thought this video would open a conversation about physics and help us realize that sometimes what we see or what we think is happening, there's something deeper going on with natural law. Questions or comments, you guys, or any part of the video you want to see again? It's very short, like I said, so if we could even get to another training video today, but how did you sort of respond to this video, Pat?
I guess trying to figure out what was going on, and I couldn't quite get there.
Which should I just let it play a few
No,
times?
yeah, the one with this with the smoke, I sort of thought, well, okay, well, the smoke is made up of particles, and that putting the flame through it might go in both directions, and so it would go back down to the candle.
Yeah. It was
Thing.
interesting. It went back down to the source of the smoke.
Right, rather than up with
Up with the smoke. Exactly.
yes.
Yeah.
Or that
And
it burned off what was above it and just then went after what was below it.
well, I think what it's showing is that the energy of the flame is going to follow the strongest current. So the stronger part of the smoke current was down near the
Down
candle, not
below,
up
yeah,
above.
right.
So, sort of path of least resistance example. And Peggy, how about you? How did you respond to seeing some of the things in this video?
So they seem like magic, of course.
I know, right?
But yeah, it kind of makes you scratch your head and go, So things are not always the way they appear.
Right. Right. And Vicky, oh, sorry, let me unmute you. I think your dogs are maybe done. Or Elizabeth.
There we go.
Oh, there you are, Vicky. Okay. How did you respond to the things in this video?
Amazed, and interested because I want to try it myself. And I wasn't sure what was the one that was kind of a structure after the newspaper one,
It was
and
very quick, but it was just a tensegrity model. And so we talk about tensegrity models all the time.
right, but what did it do?
It just was two unbalanced structures that could stay stable through the arrangement of the sticks and the rubber bands.
Oh, I couldn't see the rubber bands. It just looked
It's
like,
very quick.
oh,
It's
I
very
see.
quick. Yeah, it's
It
very.
looks like they aligned or something.
Yeah, so what they did was they took two sort of, it'll come through again, but it's super quick. It was just two kind of bracket shaped pieces of wood with like a stick. So it was how they connected them with the red rubber bands that made the configuration of the sticks be able to stay upright. Because either configuration, the two different configurations of the sticks could not stay upright on their own. But
Oh.
when you connected them with rubber bands, the whole thing became stable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's a t it, so if you look online or you Google what is a tensegrity model, it'll show you thousands of different things you can do with sticks and rubber bands. So that's all it is sticks and rubber bands that are holding each other up and stabilizing.
The one with the box sitting, crashing through or staying, when you spread out the paper under it, it spreads out how much
Weight
weight is
distribution.
being is the weight
Yes.
distribution.
It's pounds
Sort of
per.
like if you're walking across ice and you fall in, but if you crawl or slide across it, you won't.
Right. Or it's the same with a rider. If you're heavy in your seat, you have more pounds per square inch force. So the folded piece of paper couldn't handle the weight, because it's a lot of pounds per square inch. And then when they accordioned the paper and spread it out, it's fewer pounds per square inch for the same weight. It distributes the weight of the box. And so it increases the resistant force of the paper. But I think technically it's also redistributing the weight of the same box over a greater surface area, which is why riders who keep too much weight in the stirrups, the legs, the seat, or the hands are creating a thin piece of paper. They're increasing pounds per square inch.
That's how they make corrugated cardboard.
Elizabeth, how about you?
I'm fascinated. I like physics. I had a very nerdy period in my life where I was reading Richard Feynman, and somehow I've always attracted physics nerds as partners too. I'm fascinated. And in psychology, there's a big it's not physics, but it's like this big aspect of optical illusions and subjective versus objective reality. And it's nice to have these ideas mess with your the certainty of your reality. I was trying to think of scenarios where physics principles would apply to at least what I'm doing or what we're talking about with coordination balance.
So basically, what balance is, and I pulled this from physics because it's the very best. If you look it up in the dictionary, the first definition of balance is not falling, right? And the physics definition, which again, physics to me, my interest in it is that it just explains what already is. It explains nature. It explains the laws of nature that we all contend with that can be predictable. We can work with them, but it's like we can work with gravity and create airplanes in rockets, right? But we can't ignore gravity. It's a factor that's always there. And so with bodies, every change in how we use ourself generates force, and the horses are contending with the forces we generate, and we're contending with the forces of motion the horse generates. So the term in physics for balance is equalized forces in opposite directions. And then we put it in a body that has at least three dimensions. So we're trying to equalize all forces. So we can say force is body weight, which is the force of gravity acting on the mass, but we also generate force through muscle tone, muscle tension. So as we change the tightness of any given muscle, we're altering forces of motion. We're generating different types of force. So why does a dead body feel heavier than a live body? Because there's a complete absence of all muscle tension. So it's just the force of gravity acting on the mass, where a live body has muscular tension that is it's generating its own forces. So every like how we use our rein aids, how we use our leg aids, all of that makes a difference, right? Because let me stop the share. Because the way we resist, or the way, like I was just talking about this with a client, what's conditioned in our head as riders is we give aids. So if you watch people giving a rein aid, or you think about that in your mind, what do you see in your mind? What does the rider do?
Movement
moves.
Moves,
Yeah.
right? If you give a leg aid, how do you that? You move your leg against the
Right.
horse, right? Every gesture we make is generating forces. So one of the big paradigm shifts and coming out of, especially if you're a well-trained traditional rider with a lot of lessons under your belt, all of the horse world says, if I give a leg aid, my leg moves here to here. And in order to help horses balance, what we're actually doing is resisting the forces of motion generated by the horse. So my leg aid, instead of being my leg moving, my leg aid is just always the same. And the horse increases or decreases force against my stable body. That is still an aid. Because a contact by definition is a touch with no forces exchanged. An aid could be my right hand pushing my left hand down. That's how we're trained to give aids. Or an aid could also be my right hand resisting my left hand from pushing up. So this is a complete 180 in how we are taught to think about giving horses aids, because we're thinking about moving body parts. We want the neck here. We want the feet there. We want the rib cage here. We want the spine there. We want this leg over there. And so a lot of our aids are we generate a force in order to cause a shift of a body part. And I have found that does not work for balance. It just doesn't work. What we're really doing as riders, and this is where we have to understand how physics plays a role. So, a horse that's out of balance, right? Let's say they're dropping the back. We're going to feel as a rider, the side effect of the back dropping is going to create a side-to-side force against our body in the saddle. So, with this side-to-side force, are we, if it goes this way, are we trying to push it back that way by making a gesture with our seat or leg? Right? If we are, we have what force A generated by the horse, and now we've got force B generated by the rider.
So you've doubled your energy.
You've doubled the forces.
Yeah.
So what
Oh, wow.
happens? What happens when you throw a rock into a pond? Right? One
Vertical.
force,
Yeah.
the force of the rock falling, force A, meets the surface of the water, even if it's wavy water, right? Let's say it's a choppy ocean, right? So you have movement in the water and you have the movement of the rock. You throw the rock, force A hits the wave of water, force B generates what? More
Motion,
force,
yeah,
more
more
force.
force,
So
yep,
it's a two forces combined creates a wave,
right.
right? So when we are force B, if the horse is always force A in motion, the horse is generating forces. If we think we give our aids by pulling a rein, moving our arm, even closing our finger, tightening our arm muscles, right, in order to pull the head back in line, then we're generating a secondary force to do that. So if
Yep.
we gave a leg aid by moving our leg out and then in, we've introduced force B to force A. And that wave effect of the two forces colliding can push the horse right back out of balance the other direction.
Right.
So,
Wow.
how do we guide to balance? Our force doesn't involve movement. What we're really doing with a leg aid, a seat aid, or a rein aid is when the
Resistance.
horse increases pressure against our balanced body, we try not to move.
Right.
Right? So then we're not introducing, we're creating a resistant force to movement,
Right.
not creating force B through movement.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah, I like that idea because it's kind of like martial arts. Instead of being on the defense and try to attack, you wait for that person come at you and then you deflect.
You take the energy and push
Yep.
it back. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Exactly.
So
Wow.
it's, yeah. So when we think of creating a straight corridor for a path of travel, and we're trying to get the midline of the horse straight and the back and hindquarters level. So the coordination of internal straightness begins to feel like a broomstick straight invisible beam of force between the horse's head and tail. It also feels like an invisible level line of force or an invisible teeter-totter plank, the width of the horse left to right. Right? So when I feel that the forces give me a level teeter-totter under my seat left to right, and I feel the forces of motion channeling straight down the horse's spine, I know that's the result of re reducing all lateral bending of the spine and stabilizing rotation of the spine. That's going to be the feeling of equalizing forces in those directions. If you equalize forces in those directions, you also influence the physical mechanical coordination, use of the body.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to move body parts around and making gestures, which is how we're all trained traditionally, what I'm really saying is hold your balance, don't move, don't make a gesture. Keep your relationship to gravity intact while the horse's forces of motion try to disturb that. That itself is going to keep channeling all three dimensions, left, right, front, back, up, down, into equalization, which is what balance is. Equalized forces in opposing directions. And in the body, it's six opposing directions. We have a three-dimensional body. So there's always an up and down direction, a left, right direction, a front, back direction. So when we're talking about equalizing forces in opposite directions, a body gets complicated, right? And then a body also has a shape, like a horse's shape is the same. So how horses equalize muscle and weight force in relationship to gravity is always the same in balance, but it can be wildly different when they lose balance. And then how a human organizes weight and muscle tone in relationship to gravity is always the same between people, but it's very different because we have a very different shaped body than a horse.
Wow.
So how gravity acts on our body is very different than how gravity acts on the shape of a horse. So we have to understand how both bodies balance in order to equalize forces in three dimensions. And where those three dimensions intersect is the point of balance, right? So the center of mass is different than the point of balance because the point of balance is always the midway point between weight and muscle force. So, in other words, if my body weight tips too far to the left, the muscles on the right automatically unconsciously tighten so that I don't fall over. So my point of balance is the midway point between my weight and my muscle tension, but it's no longer vertical to gravity when I'm here. If I balance my weight and my muscle tone equally side to side, now my point of balance is still the midpoint of weight and muscle force, but it's also vertically aligned to gravity. I know there's a little head spinning, so you guys have questions?
It's a gyroscope or the center of the tornado. That is just amazing. Yeah, and it's kind of like what you know, for I think I forgot who it was that said Pat, I think when you said, oh, I thought I was just supposed to keep the neck straight. And when you always say it's opposite of what we've always learned, it's resistance to the turn as opposed to directing the turn
Right.
only for the rest of our body.
So we in at a basic level, we think, okay, I need to turn a horse. I'm going to actively create a leading force on one rein.
Right.
I'm going to pull the horse the direction I want to go, right? And when we're talking about balance, that won't work anymore.
Right.
It still might get you the horse to turn. Like the horse will still turn.
Right.
But the horse may lose balance in order to turn that way. That's the
So I have a
difference.
question. Where does the mental communication come in? Because when I tell the riders is think about where you want to go first, and that the studies they say that I've read, the energy that our brains send to our muscle is that communication can be picked up by a horse. That's how they know that they can kind of do what we're thinking.
I think our thoughts alter weight distribution and muscle tone on a very subtle level.
Right.
So kind of like the physics video looks like magic. It
Right.
feels like magic. That's what horse whispering is. But it's a subtle layer of communication working with the invisible forces that makes it look like magic, which we're all capable of doing. That's what we're here to learn.
Right. Because that when I see when you want to resist, instead of saying, oh, resist with that muscle, I just say, think about that muscle resisting, and it's enough to where the horse feels it.
That could be. And some horses, it's not nearly enough because some horses are losing their balance. They feel like a stormy ocean to ride, right? So the ocean is the ocean, but depending on the forces of nature influencing it, it can be dangerous to take the boat out or it could be fun.
Right, depending
So
on how sensitive it is.
a horse that's really dysfunctional to me feels like a stormy ocean. And what balance feels like, no matter the breed, the age, the saddle, or what task we're doing with a horse, when a horse is in balance, you can think of that quarter between the four batteries. That point of balance is moving between equal forces. And what we actually feel in the saddle is we don't even feel it. Their point of balance is about the size of a quarter, but it sits in the crosshairs of the saddle, the center of the saddle, and does not move because it becomes the eye of movement, the eye of the hurricane, the eye of the tornado, which is a nothing, right? So the eye of a hurricane is nothing, and there's no force because if you equalize forces in opposing directions, and you can think of a hurricane as 360 degrees, but you don't get the front wall at 100 miles an hour and the back wall at 150. If it's 100 coming in, it's 100 going out. It's always equalized. But what's in the middle is nothing because when you equalize opposing directions, equalize amounts of force in opposing directions, the sum is zero.
Correct.
So
Very cool.
you get a zero sum of force in the center of forces that are equalized throughout the entire body.
That's exciting.
Crazy, crazy. And Believe it or not, the explanation is a little harder. It makes our head hurt, but it's the most practical way to work with a horse that I've ever found. Because you can't get away from what the horse feels like when you fork a leg over. You just can't get away from it. That's what we ride, are these invisible forces of motion. And so the way the forces of motion are generated in a horse is it's always starting in the hindquarter. And the forces of motion generated by the movement of the hind legs, the muscles of the back and hindquarter, the locomotion system, the accelerator, is going to travel through the horse's body. So we can think of it as the mouth of the river is behind us. The river comes from behind us, flows underneath us, and out the front. That's the direction of the forces of motion in a horse. So then, if we want a horse straight, we're basically channeling the river. We're building a culvert, right? So horses that don't want to go forward, that river is usually splashing out left and right, or it's just all that energy of forward motion is dissipating to one side or the other. That's why they have no more desire to go forward. So our arms and legs are creating a corridor of sorts, like a concrete culvert, to let whatever forces of motion are flowing start to go in a singular direction. That's always going to increase rate of flow, rate of speed, right? So that's part of what we're doing with a horse that is not very forward, or if we're steering, we're basically taking that channeled force of motion and directing it on various paths of travel. So that's how straightness and steering are related. But if the horse has a bend in the spine, then the forces of motion are kind of pushing out to the right or the left. If the horse has rotation, then the forces of motion are pushing out too much to the right or the left or back and forth, right and left. So that's how it relates to the physical coordination. And that's what we really feel is the result of the coordination in the forces of motion. And in turn, if we influence and channel the forces of motion, we indirectly guide the mechanical coordination. But there's some wiggle room in there for the horse to figure out their own changes in coordination. We're not trying to put body parts anywhere. We're trying to organize invisible forces of motion. And so our aids become lighter. We're less frustrated. We understand if the horse gains and loses balance, or gains and loses steering, or it gets slowly easier to slow down, or slowly easier to stay forward. All of that is the feeling of the coordination changing. And even with, say, sitting trot, it was, working with Jean-Luc, he doesn't even teach the sitting trot to riders as a skill because he goes, if the trot is balanced, you sit the trot like you sit the walk. And if the trot is hard to sit, then you should be posting anyways because the horse is out of balance. And what we see are these lessons in how to undulate your spine in order to keep your butt in the saddle on a bad trot. But again, that can increase, like that piece of paper, the pounds per square inch that we're influencing our horses with our weight, and it has a negative impact on their coordination. I know this is a lot of mental exercise this week. Sorry, you guys. Oh, and we're running over. So really quickly, just what do you think will stick with you from this conversation today? Pat, we'll start with you.
All of it,
All of
because I wrote
it.
it down.
Cat.
I like the whole physics thing, and I mean, I keep going back to one of the lessons that we had on with when I was riding Shaggy, and he felt like sitting in a canoe that was going just so smoothly. It was so different from his normal feel.
Yes.
because he was balanced, I was balanced,
That's what
and it
balance
was
gives
just the
us.
flow.
Yeah, it's just a
So it all
smooth,
kind of
lazy
fits in
river.
around that.
Yes. And Elizabeth, being new to this, what do you think?
I kept thinking about Sadie's tendency to bend left and drift into the middle of the arena, and the question between what's force and what's resistance. So probably constantly questioning, is this force or is this resistance? Is it maintaining the center of gravity? No, that.
Well, if you look at a video of yourself riding, if you're using aids, introducing new forces, you will visibly move. If you see yourself not moving during a ride, then you're using resistant force. And the sweat will be dripping down your back to do it that way. It is a lot of energy just to not let the horse move your bones, right?
Okay, then I.
And so then we're using muscle resistance and weight resistance, but we don't move our bones. As soon as we introduce a new force, the bones have to move to do that. So we see it.
Well, I got plenty of sweat, so maybe I'm
Yeah,
doing
I know. And
something.
everybody goes, "Oh, you look so quiet. It looks like such a pleasant ride." And you're just, bah. It's
What are you
hard. Yeah, it's
talking
hard to ride.
about?
Peggy, how about you?
Well, I think it goes back to the resistance rather than the aids. So not doing, but resisting.
Yeah, and it's so deeply ingrained. As long as I've worked with Marianne, who boards her horse Lexi here, she was still having trouble when we started working on Lexi's engagement, which is very hard, and lifting the back. The way Lexi escapes, like most horses, is starts to bend and rotate. And so if you can't resist the rotation and the lateral bending when you start doing tight turns or transitions, then the horse doesn't lift the back or engage the hindquarters. They escape through the side doors. And so we just went over this with Marianne, and it was so unconscious that it was still a big epiphany, even though she's heard this stuff a lot. It was a big epiphany, and she had to work much harder than she thought she did. She thought, resist, relax, resist, relax. And I said, no, you got to resist the whole time. Because your horse tries to roll the barrel the whole time. So that's how we know how frequently we have to give aids and how much effort we have to put into the resistance is the aid. But what we look like is we're not doing anything. And Vicky, how about you?
Well, I just tried the arrow thing with the glass and it didn't work. So now I'm really a skeptic.
You might need the camera lens as the third component. I don't know.
Don't know either, but
Do
I
it
tried
through your
it
phone
on
and see if that changes it.
Yeah, I tried it on two different round glasses and sizes of arrows. So that's got me baffled. But
I can't do the math and I'm not a physics person. What physics does for me is it explains what already is and how to work with it. So it'll be interesting. You might have to research how that arrow and glass thing works with the water.
yeah, but yeah, I like this whole description. To me, for some reason, my dyslexic mind could wrap around the abstract very easily.
Oh, good. Well, and that's why, because balance physical coordination is complex. I try to make it as simple as possible, but you can't make it simpler than it is. So the two concepts in the book, Optimal Balance Essentials, the point of balance is looking at balance for people and horses through the lens of physics. The basic balance concept is looking at the same thing through the lens of biomechanics. But they're like this. You can't change mechanical coordination without altering the forces of motion. And you can change mechanical coordination by working with the forces of motion and trying to equalize
Sure. That's so cool.
them.
And it's the same thing with people's thoughts or perceptions, because history comes in and their truth is different than someone else's truth, but it's still the same concept. Or could be.
Well, the truth is, what is predictable, reliable, and reproducible?
Yeah.
That's what, scientific method is about, having a hypothesis and then a theory. And a theory in science is as close as you get to a fact,
Right.
because it's been dis people have tried to disprove it
Sure.
a lot. So it stands as a theory because
Oh,
it's
we
been
lost you.
tested.
Wow, very cool stuff. Thank you.
All right, you guys, we better wrap it up.
Okie doke.
Oops.
See ya.
See
Bye.
ya. Bye.
Bye. Bye.